good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Couldn't cut, he need cut again.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakunja Hade.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake. I'm your host today, Wendy Pilot. I'm sitting in for Robert Pilot. He's doing important Ho-Chunk legislative work, so Ogama and I will be hosting tonight's show. On Native Roots Radio Presents, I'm Awake, we discuss local and national Native American news and events. And as you know, Ogama, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues. This portion of the show is brought to you by Native Roots Trading Post. We're excited to be at the Minnesota State Fair starting Thursday, August 25th through Monday, September 5th. In the meantime, you can visit our online store, Native Roots Trading Post. Now we're going to go to the news. Oh, before we go to the news, I just wanted to tell everyone it's a special show tonight. Ogama and I will be here hosting the show by ourselves, and we're really excited because we're going to be talking about everything that we want to talk about. So up later on after the news, we're going to be talking about the PRO Act, which is the bill to protect reproductive health. We're going to talk about Joe Biden's executive order and some updates about that. A protest is happening in St. Paul, Minnesota. We'll let you know about the news on that. Ogama is going to be talking again about more Native American news and indigenous news, so we'll hear that. And I will be talking about wolves later on in the sacred animal section at the end of the show. But before we do that, let's go to Ogama with the news you won't hear anywhere else.
Hi, Bushu, Anin, everybody. I'm Ogama Ganuakwe. My name means strong golden eagle woman, and I am a citizen of the Red Lake Nation in northern Minnesota. I currently reside in central Minnesota, and I'm happy to bring you the news here on Native Roots Radio. I always like to take the opportunity to uplift the tribe that I'm a citizen of, Red Lake Nation. Just from a recent article here from Lakeland Public Television, or Lakeland PBS, which is the local station where I live, Red Lake Nation's Economic and Development and Planning Committee. Excuse me. I have a cat in here who just jumped from a high place. So
my cat will be visiting any time now. So
she's fine. But if you heard that, she's all right. Anyway, Red Lake Nation's Economic Development and Planning Committee has been working on ways to improve food security and concerns for the community of Red Lake by creating three agriculture divisions. And what they've done is they built a buffalo ranch, which is now currently fenced in with 280 acres of land and will fence in another 300 acres in the next year. There will be 140 acres of hemp and hay for feeding the buffalo that will rotate each year. And there's also going to be about 8 acres of fenced in garden with fresh produce to provide for the community of Red Lake. The Red Lake Department of Agriculture also hopes to build future classrooms on the ranch in order to help both youth and the public learn more about agriculture. They also hope to have around 600 acres of land for produce and buffalo when the fencing is complete. This is a huge step towards food sovereignty for Native people, so I cannot express how proud and excited I am for Red Lake Nation to be taking this step. Red Lake Nation is a bit of a food desert. You know, we talk about that in urban populations, but in Red Lake, there's one, maybe two stores, and it's especially during COVID, it's been especially hard to get access to things. And baby formula has been a big issue, and fresh fruit and fresh produce is also an issue as well. So to have access to be able to grow those things and distribute those things as a community without having to rely on outside sources to do that is a huge step, and I'm very proud. So, which leads me into my next story. A big part of the reason that is, here's my cat, say hello, so important is because there have been reports, The Guardian released an article just today or yesterday, I believe, microplastic contamination has been reported in beef and pork for the first time, as well as in the blood of cows and pigs on farms. So scientists in the Netherlands found particles in 3/4 of meat and milk products tested and every blood sample in their pilot study. They also found in every sample of animal pellet feed tested microplastics, which includes obviously a route for contamination. And the food products were also then packaged in plastic, which is always another possible route for plastic contamination. The researchers also reported microplastics in human blood for the first time this past March, and they used the same methods that they used to test for that on animals. Currently, the impact on human or farm animal health containing microplastics within your system is really not known, but they're concerned because microplastics can cause damage to human cells in a laboratory, and air pollution particles are already known to enter the body and cause millions of early deaths per year. And they also know that some wildlife is also known to be harmed by microplastics. Wendy, I think you know a little bit about the oceans being harmed by that. Is that right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And a lot of the seafood that you eat, even the salt that we use in our salt shakers have microplastics in it.
Exactly. Yep. Huge amounts of plastic waste are dumped into the environment. And they believe that microplastics have contaminated now the entire planet all the way from the summit of Mount Everest all the way to the deepest oceans. And people are already known to consume tiny particles via food and water, as well as breathing them in. So this is, I guess what's funny is that they're reporting on this for the first time as it, you know, this is the first time they've detected this, but when microplastics are so prevalent, I mean, you have to imagine that would be the case, right, Wendy?
Oh, absolutely. You know, I think about my grandmother. You know, she died when she was 96 years old. And when she was a kid growing up, she didn't have all these pesticides and pollution and, you know, things that she put in her body were pretty, you know, organic and natural and stuff like that, because that's how it was back then. And I think that's why she lived so long. But you don't see many people nowadays living until they're 96. You know, most people are unfortunately dying of cancer of some sort or another because of all the pollution and pesticides and poison that we eat. We really can't help it. It's just in the food that we have.
Exactly. There's almost nothing that you can do. There are some routes that you can take and some things that you can do to try to limit your exposure. But at this time, it's pretty much close to impossible to completely avoid it, which is absolutely devastating and stress rendering for a lot of people, I think, especially people in my generation and younger. You know, I have a 9-year-old at home who worries about these kinds of things. It's definitely something that is affecting people all over the planet. And if they found this in meat and pork products, in beef and pork and milk in Switzerland, I can't imagine what the levels look like here in the U.S.
Yeah, I'm sure it's here, and I'm sure that's what's happening. I mean, when I was a kid, I think I told the story on the air once. You know, in the springtime, when the mosquitoes were coming out and the bugs were coming out, these trucks used to go through our neighborhood. Now, I was like, I don't know, five, six years old, these trucks would drive through the neighborhood and spray for the bugs and the mosquitoes. And it was like a white cloud. And we used to think it was fun. We used to play in the clouds. We used to go and run and play in the clouds. And I'm sure that the chemicals that they were spraying have long been taken off the market because of these horrible things. So I'm just waiting for what's going to happen to my body very soon. So,
you know, I have to just put those things out of my mind to function as a human being in the current times. I just really do. The last thing that I wanted to touch base on today is going to lead us a little bit into our next segment about the right to abortion access in the United States. State Senator Mary Kunish sent this to me, saying a Ramsey County judge today ruled that many of Minnesota's restrictions for abortion are actually unconstitutional. The district court decision stated that the abortion laws violate the right to privacy because they infringe upon the fundamental right under the Minnesota Constitution to access abortion care and do not withstand strict scrutiny. The ruling applies to the restrictions in the statute, including a 24-hour waiting period, two-parent notification, abortions to be performed in a hospital or facility within the only performed by a physician as well. So there's more with that story coming up in the next segment, right, Wendy?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking to you about that, especially about the two-parent rule. I want to talk a little bit about that too. But we'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be back after this short break. Please stay with us. J&S Bean Factory is a Native-owned, community-supported, cozy, artsy coffee shop which offers roasted on-site beans, live music, and baked goods. Relax in the beautiful outside patio. City Pages writes, voted top 10 coffee shops. Tucked into a quiet corner of St. Paul's Highland Park neighborhood, this coffee shop roasts beans on-site from the best coffee-growing countries in the world. Located at 1518 Randolph Avenue, St. Paul. The good stuff.
If the statistics say that 1 in 3 Native women and 1 in 6 Native men have experienced sexual assault in their lifetime, it means our whole community is affected by sexual violence. 1 is too many. Don't stand by. Stand up. Don't engage in acts of sexual violence and shut down the dirty jokes, the gossip, the victim blaming and shaming. As a community, we can change the way we respond. Contact the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition to attend a workshop to learn more.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Hi, my name is Pamela Topchian. I'm a former nurse, published author, and board-certified hypnotherapist with HypnoBreakthrough.com. Do you feel stuck in a rut, finding yourself wondering if this is all there is to life, tired of just existing? HypnoBreakthrough can help you to reduce stress, release fears, gain confidence, and reach your life's goals holistically, mindfully, and gently. So I ask you, what changes would you like to see in your life? Let's talk about it. Contact me, Pamela Topchian, board-certified hypnotherapist, to schedule your free consultation, which includes a complimentary stress-reducing sample session, so you can see how it feels for yourself before any commitments are made. Go to HypnoBreakthrough.com for all the information. That's HypnoBreakthrough.com.
You're listening to Native Roots Radio. This is Spirit from Reservation Dogs. Get up and listen.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Hey, everyone. This is Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I am Wendy Pilot, and I'm here with Ogama, and we are hosting tonight's show. And Ogama and I are going to have a good discussion here, I think, about what's happening right now in the United States as far as our women's rights and our rights for reproductive health. And what that looks like, what kind of laws are being made, and what we can do about it. So, Ogama, did you want to talk a little bit about the PRO Act, which is the Bill to Protect Reproductive Health? Let's talk a little bit about that. We went to break talking about that.
Yes. So the PRO Act was introduced into the Minnesota state. So this is just to be clear, everybody, this is a state level here in Minnesota. For our relatives who are in the Dakotas, Wisconsin, Iowa, any of our surrounding states, this applies to Minnesota at this time. But the bill was introduced into the House and Senate. It's House File 259, Senate File 731, and it's authored by Representative Kelly Morrison and Senator Jen McEwen. And what it does is it recognizes an individual's reproductive health care decisions are theirs to make. It establishes the fundamental right of Minnesotans to make individual decisions about reproductive health care, including contraception, abortion, and pregnancy. It recognizes a fundamental right to privacy for personal reproductive health decisions. It prevents politicians from interfering with a person's fundamental right to make their own reproductive health care decisions. And it prevents the state from discriminating against Minnesotans who exercise their fundamental reproductive rights on the basis of sex, gender identity or expression, perceived gender identity or expression, sexual orientation, disability, race, ethnicity, age, national origin, immigration status, or religion. It is incredibly important that the state of Minnesota put this through. Mary Kunish, Senator Mary Kunish, let me know that it did not pass. But I was just talking before the break, Wendy, about what happened today with Ramsey County, if I could talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, go ahead. Let our audience know.
Yeah, so just today, a Ramsey County judge ruled that Minnesota's abortion restrictions are unconstitutional. The rules that they're referring to in this ruling are a 24-hour waiting period and mandated script or disclosures a provider must read prior to administering an abortion.
Yeah, maybe we talked about that. Yeah, let's just go one at a time. What was the first one again? Could you reread
that one?
It's
a 24-hour waiting period and a mandatory script and disclosures a provider must read prior to administering an abortion.
Yeah.
So we don't even have this for gun access, people.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going to say. Exactly. And then Mary Kunish, Senator Mary Kunish, was saying that some of the material that the doctor has to give to the patient is really even untrue. It's not even factual information. But they have to send this poor girl home and wait 24 hours. Now, not only that this young girl – most likely would have had to cross state lines now, right, to go elsewhere to get this abortion that she needs, right? So she's young, right? She can't tell her parents. Where is she going to tell her parents that she's going? How is she going to get transportation? How is she going to get money? How is she going to cross state lines and do all of this without – in her privacy, in for her own body. Yeah.
Right. And in Minnesota, there is – Wendy's referring to the situation where there would be a person who is a minor who's been rendered pregnant for whatever reason decides – because a person who is 16 still has a right to their own life and to their own medical decisions. So how does this person with a receive access to an abortion in the current climate? Minnesota also has a two-parent notification requirement for minors, meaning they have to notify both of their parents. And I don't believe there's any sort of stipulation that says that they don't have to notify if they don't have a relationship with one of their parents. Exactly. So if you happen to be a person that had no contact with one or the other of your birth parents, or maybe you don't know how to contact them, you are unable to access an abortion in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's also a law that requires them to be performed in a hospital or abortion facility if the abortion is performed after the first trimester. So that means after the 12-week mark.
Yep.
Which I think, you know, abortion facilities and hospitals are, you know, great places, and those are what those are there for. But those who are professional at performing these services, abortion is a very, very safe procedure. It's one of the safest you can undergo, so long as you're doing it under the care of a professional.
Exactly.
There's also a law stating that abortions can only be performed by a physician, and there are felony penalties for regulatory infractions, meaning if they do not inform you with a mandated script that includes the lingo, what did Senator Kunish say yesterday? It includes language that says that you're at a higher risk for breast cancer if you've had an abortion, and that's not true.
I can't even imagine that they have that in that literature that is given out to people. That's false information.
Right. And House Minority Leader and Attorney General candidate Jim Schultz have already called on Attorney General Ellison to appeal this decision. Mm-hmm. So they're already trying to undo this.
Right.
They also noted in this article, and I'm not sure where the article is that Senator Kunesh sent me, but it says Minnesota reformers details on how Jim Schultz, who's candidate for attorney general, actually served on a board of an anti-abortion group that produces and distributes claims about abortion that have already been debunked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So as an attorney general in Minnesota to hold for somebody to be a candidate for that office and hold such a strong conviction about this just seems incredibly strange to me. Although currently Attorney General Ellison supports abortion rights, but the office has defended the state statutes in this case. And Attorney General Ellison says that him and his team are reviewing the decision and beginning to consult with their clients about any next steps.
Mm-hmm.
And he also said it's clear that Judge Gilligan, who ruled this in Ramsey County, put a lot of thought into this and that he clearly did not take it lightly, which why would you, right, Wendy?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And now women are, after 50 years of having their health and their bodies protected, having body autonomy, and now women have to scramble around to figure out how they're going to manage this. And this is really a tough thing. You know, President Biden did sign an executive order protecting access to reproductive health care services, but he can only do so much. He cannot reverse what the Supreme Court did. However, what he can do is he's safeguarding access to reproductive health care services. He's directed the Secretary of Health and Human Services, the HHS, to take the following actions and to submit a report to him within 30 days on efforts to protect access to medication abortion. The HHS will take additional action to protect and expand access to abortion care, including access to medication that the FDA approved as safe and effective over 20 years ago. So that's an important step for him to take. To ensure emergency medical care, the HHS will take steps to ensure all patients, including pregnant women and those experiencing pregnancy loss, have access to full rights and protections for emergency medical care afforded under the law, including by considering updates to current guidance and clarify physician responsibility and protections under the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act. And they'll be sending in a report on that. Protect access to contraception. I mean, I can't even imagine women who will be denied any type of contraception. Birth control pills, IUDs. I mean, does that mean condoms is off the table also? I mean, I don't know.
It renders you speechless, doesn't it?
It does. Did you hear that? I was speechless. We'll take additional actions to expand access to the full range of reproductive health services, including family planning services and providers, such as access to emergency contraception and long-acting reversible contraception like IUDs. In all 50 states and the District of Columbia, the Affordable Care Act guarantees coverage of women's preventative services, including free birth control and contraception, contraceptive counseling for individuals and covered dependents. This is what we need. And this is everybody in November, on November 8th, come on, women, everybody out there, let's get people in our states to be for women's rights, and we need to vote those in. We'll be right back after this short break. You're listening to Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake.
Hey, Wendy, what are we doing for dinner after the show?
How about we go to J. Selby's on 169 Victoria Street in St. Paul? They have a delicious plant-based menu that's compassionate and environmentally sustainable.
I'm getting their spot-on vegan Big Mac, the dirty secret.
You can pick up and they deliver within a five-mile radius, or you can call them at 651-222-3263 or visit jselbys.com.
Well, you sold me one. Let's go order at J. Selby's tonight.
I'm hungry.
This is Santita Jackson. Monday through Friday, 6 to 8 a.m. Central, we'll bring you the best progressive talkers, thinkers, and doers on AM 950, Minnesota's progressive voice.
Hi, this is Chad from AM 950. Snap Construction is arguably the most well-reviewed roofing, siding, window, and insulation contractor in the metro. Ryan is so excited about working with AM 950 and our listeners that he wants to help us grow.
This is Ryan, owner of Snap Construction. I was friends with Chad long before I started marketing with him. I was a bit skeptical of radio advertising before Chad convinced us to run ads. The advertising's been so successful, we want to help the station grow. We've absolutely loved working with the listeners of AM 950, and we all know how extremely important this radio station is to the community. To help AM 950 grow this summer, Snap Construction will be putting up proceeds to assist the station in marketing on social media. Snap Construction encourages you to follow, engage, share, and interact on the AM 950 social media platforms. Together, we can all work to ensure AM 950 continues to thrive and grow in our communities. We stand by our work with a lifetime craftsmanship guarantee. For a free estimate or more information on our financing, call 612-333-SNAP or check us out online.
Hi, I'm Scott Chambliot from Chambliot Family Dentistry. We're the fear-free, shame-free dental office. We know dental anxiety and dental phobia are real. We'll take the time to get to know you and give you what you need to be comfortable at all times. We offer free nitrous oxide laughing gas and have high-tech options to help you feel calm and relaxed during your appointments. We'll help you get through every appointment in the most pain-free way possible. If you're having a dental emergency, we'll try and get you in the same day you call, because we don't like to see anyone in pain. As my daughter Rachel says,
if you don't see my dad, please see another dentist. Take care of your teeth, because they're the only ones you get.
This is Chad, owner of AM 950. I've been going to Chambliot Family Dentistry for years. They get me in last minute when I'm in pain and make regular checkups easy and comfortable.
Chambliot Family Dentistry in Hopkins and St. Paul. Find them online at ChambliotFamilyDentistry.com or call 1-800-FIX-MY-TEETH.
With a look at your AM 950 weather, I'm Patrick Lulia. Clear skies tonight with a low of 63, then more sunshine on Tuesday with a high of 83. Nightingale at 26th and Lindale in Minneapolis is your cozy, comfortable neighborhood bar and restaurant. Now open daily from 5 p.m. to 1 a.m. with their full menu available until midnight. Check them out today at nightingalempls.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
And we're back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
This is Wendy Pilot, and I'm here with Ogama tonight. We are hosting tonight's show. Robert Pilot is in a Ho-Chunk legislative meeting, so we will let him do that. And Ogama and I are hosting tonight. I just got word that we have a special guest tonight, and I'm so happy that she is here. We have Dr. Maureen Hackett on, and Dr. Maureen Hackett is the founder of Howling for Wolves. And this portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations. Thank you so much, and welcome to the show, Dr. Maureen Hackett, founder of Howling for Wolves. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I thought maybe you'd want to send me a link. Are you guys on YouTube today?
Nope, you are on the radio, and you are live, so we're just going to keep it
like that. All right. Great. Yes. Well, thanks for having me. I got this at the last minute. That was my problem, but I'm here.
That's fantastic, Maureen. Thank you so much, Dr. Hackett. So I would love for you to tell our audience a little bit about Howling for Wolves, how it came about, why you're so passionate about it, why it's important. And let's talk about our wolves. Hopefully you'll be able to stay with us for two segments because we have lots to talk about. But if not, we will take it forever,
absolutely.
For us. Yes, thank you so much.
I will stay. So, first of all, you can call me Maureen, Wendy, since I call you Wendy. Absolutely. This is not a doctor's office, but it is nice that you remind people that I have a medical degree and I still practice. I do consultation liaison psychiatry in a hospital. Anyway, so Howling for Wolves started in 2012 in response to the rush to a wolf hunt following delisting in 2011. Basically, there was a rush to a wolf hunt, even though there was a plan that said we would not even consider a wolf hunt for 5 years following removal of protections for the endangered species. Following that delisting, we were not to consider wolf hunting for 5 years and not without full public comment and thorough scientific studies, including how the population was doing. And that was in the wolf plan of 2001. Mm-hmm. But they abandoned all that, and the only thing that was put in law was a public comment and five-year moratorium. So that was lined out in a budget deal in the summer of 2011. So as soon as the wolf was delisted, it was all hand in glove, working with federal politicians, with our governor at the time, and they had a wolf hunt. Basically, the legislature voted for it, including a lot of bipartisan. We had some good opposition, but we couldn't stop that. We had three consecutive wolf hunts, but we prevailed finally. The Humane Society of the United States filed the lawsuit with our encouragement, of course, and being sort of egged on by the fact that we were making such progress. And in 2014, December, the wolf was put back on the endangered species list. Then we had to fight Congress in 2015. So it's been a battle, but the wolf then is back on the endangered species list again after it was temporarily removed by the previous administration, whose name will be not even stated here. So right now, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources has a new wolf plan. It'll be interesting to see how much they follow it, but I have grave concerns about this plan. Mm-hmm. So there's a draft plan that the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources just put out, and Howling for Wolves is sort of catching up, trying to figure out how to tell people how to answer the survey, because the survey is quite extensive, and the plan is a lot of words, but the bottom line is they're allowing for the possibility of killing wolves in multiple ways for multiple reasons, including researching how killing wolves will affect the moose population. Now, I know that's a simplification of all the words that they wrote in their 50 pages, but they have wolf killing for livestock predation. They have potential hunts coming up. It's all in the plan, and it's all vague in terms of when they would start this killing, but they talk about having a stable wolf population, and I'll stop talking.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you.
I'll take your questions.
You know what? 2 days ago, the Star Tribune, which I was going to talk about later on, but since you're here, I'd rather have you talk because you are the wolf expert. They put a really good article in the Star Tribune. That's our Minnesota newspaper here in the Twin Cities. 5 key takeaways about wolves in Minnesota, and they say Minnesota is the only place in the United States to never kill all its wolves. Minnesota has as many wolves as the rest of the lower 48 combined. They really talked about how wolf attacks on livestock are so rare. And they talked about why they're so rare and how they're working on building in Voyageurs National Park. Researchers building 6-foot-high fences with a skirt around it, the property, and they're really finding that the results are really very good because wolves do not seem to jump fences for prey. They also talked about how Minnesota wolves are often killed legally. If a calf is killed by a wolf, the rancher will tell the federal trappers. They'll go in and they'll just put traps around and kill any wolf that's around there, no matter if it's the wolf that killed the calf or not.
I would love to talk about that.
Yeah, please go ahead. We have about four minutes and then we'll go into the next segment. I'll let you know when your time's up.
Okay.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. Sorry, I'm on radio. I have to learn one person talks at a time. But you're right about all those points. The key that people need to understand, though, is the Department of Natural Resources keeps saying that the wolf population is stable, stable, stable. Mm-hmm. Well, the pack sizes are smaller every time they measure them since 1980s. So now we have like 3.6 wolves per pack was the last time they announced it. And pack sizes, along with lion pride sizes, is more sensitive than measuring a small population of wildlife in a very great range, right? So that great range and that small population, very, very hard to get sensitive enough information to see the changes in the population. So of course it looks stable, but the pack sizes keep getting smaller. And the DNR does not talk about that. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of killing wolves for livestock predation, there is no science that shows that that works other than if you kill so many wolves that they can't have litters. There's actual science that shows you actually increase conflicts the following year when you kill wolves. You increase conflicts on cows and you increase conflicts on sheep. Per wolf killed, you can actually see the proportionate number of increasing in conflicts. And that's because killing wolves breaks up packs and causes more problems for the wolf, which then results in going for easy prey because they can't raise their young. They don't have enough in the pack. The United States Department of Ag does go in and clears out as many wolves as possible and as quickly as possible. So I have a lot of ideas about what we can do about that, and we can maybe talk about that in the next segment. Mm-hmm. But I did enjoy the fact that they put so much of a spotlight on our wolves. Mm-hmm. I was bothered by all of the collaring, all of the anesthetizing, all of the handling that they are doing and plan to do for wolves, because if you don't kill them, why do we have to monitor the live wolf population? What we really need to monitor is the illegal kills.
Yes.
And what we really need to do is model non-lethal plans for the wolf, because every time the wolf is removed from the endangered species list, it's different than other animals. People kill wolves. People kill wolves for all kinds of reasons, and they're emboldened when the state and feds kill wolves. That has actually been shown scientifically, that with legal killing comes more illegal killing. So Howling for Wolves keeps advocating for an entire non-lethal wolf plan, because we don't think that we have to put in a plan killing wolves for reasons that are not shown even now to have a scientific, valid basis. So why put it in a plan that's going to last for 10 years moving forward? We think that that is the wrong way to go, and that if we really want to be demonstrating to the rest of the United States how to handle living with wolves, we need to do an entirely non-lethal plan. Now, there are laws already that are in Minnesota that you can kill animals, even an endangered species, to protect human life and property. Believe it or not, there are two laws, and they don't involve wolves. They involve any animal. So that's our take on it. Now, we are going to be building out our Take Action page. I'm working on that right now to help people fill out the Minnesota DNR survey on their draft wolf plan, because we'd like to get a lot of responses, and we would like to focus on no wolf killing.
Exactly. Thank you so much. Can you stay on for another segment?
Absolutely.
Awesome. We'll be back after this short break. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Don't fall for vaccine misinformation. Local medical professionals are available to answer any of your questions. Initial shots and boosters are safe for people who are pregnant and even young children. Right now, vaccines are available for anyone over 6 months of age, while boosters are available for anyone over the age of five. This message brought to you by the Native American Community Clinic. Find a vaccination site by calling 651-304-9986 or visit vaccineconnector.mn.gov.
Hey, it's Patrick for Zero Res. Hot July days are best enjoyed with family and friends at the backyard barbecue with your favorite summer foods. But before you know it, you've got those sticky pop spills and barbecue stains all over the place. Lucky for you, Zero Res can get those sweet, sticky messes out of your home with no problem. Zero Res has your back on carpet, tile, area rug, and upholstery cleanings, and their experienced technicians know the best care for each of the unique surfaces in your home. And don't forget about your air ducts. If they're dirty, your indoor air quality suffers. Trust the cleaning heroes at Zero Res to safely clean years of built-up dust and gunk out of your air ducts as your air conditioner swirls through the summer. Schedule your summer cleaning today at ZeroResMinnesota.com with the AM950 special to get 3 rooms of carpet clean starting at just $129 and take $100 off any air duct cleaning service. Backward or forward spells the same. Zero Res.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
This is Winona the Duke of Honor the Earth, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio. I'm Awake.
Welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and this is Robert Pilot.
Hi, this is Wendy Pilot, and I'm here with Ogama. We have a special guest tonight, Dr. Maureen Hackett. She's from the Howling for Wolves, one of our wonderful sponsors here on Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Before we get to Dr. Hackett, Ogama has a rally she wants to tell us about what's happening here locally in Minnesota.
Yes, so this Sunday, July 17th, there will be a reproductive rights rally and march in St. Paul, Minnesota. It is starting at 11 a.m. at St. Paul College, and they will be marching to the Minnesota Capitol Building. You can find out more information and RSVP to the march at unrestrictmn.org.
Yes, I will be there. Thank you very much, Ogam. I appreciate that notification. We are here with Dr. Maureen Hackett. Dr. Maureen Hackett is the founder of Howling for Wolves, Protecting Wolves for Future Generations. We howl every time. So hello, Dr. Hackett. Yes, let's continue our important conversation about Minnesota wolves. I can't remember where we left off, but
we were leaving off at asking people to watch our Take Action page. We don't have it up yet, but or you can go directly to the Minnesota DNR if anybody's and look for the draft wolf plan and the survey that goes with it. Also, tomorrow night or Wednesday night at 6 o'clock, there's going to be a webinar by the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources about their draft wolf plan. And I have several questions for them, but I don't know that I can get all the questions in. So people could certainly write, they could write me actually at Hackett, H-A-C-K-E-T-T at howlingforwolves.org if they manage to sign up for the webinar and they want some ideas for questions. I think one person needs to ask, what makes the DNR think that the wolf is safe with collars on them? You know, aren't they better targets? I understand that the research at Voyagers is important and there's good human interest in it and it's great for the wolf. They've had four wolves killed, I believe. Has it been four in their research?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And sure. They also talk about the pack sizes. They said there was usually two adults and two or three pups. Mm-hmm. And I'm not hearing a lot of extended packs. And in Voyagers, that's probably because it's very limited. There's a lot of wetlands, and so there's not a lot of wolf territory in Voyagers. So they have small packs and small territories. But they are still being killed illegally. The Minnesota Department of Natural Resources is obligated by law to list all known wolf deaths. And we had that law passed in 2014. They have not updated their website with wolf mortalities, at least as of a few days ago, for over a year and a half.
Wow.
So my question would be, does the DNR really know about illegal wolf killing? And finally, on this whole wolf plan, it is based on the belief that they can control wolf killing. Mm-hmm. And that's my whole issue, is wolf killing is very difficult to control, legally or illegally, with a public hunt or outside a public hunt, whatever you call it. Wolf killing happens in secret. Mm-hmm. And so because it's so likely to happen by a small minority of people, but because it happens, I think the state and the government need to model non-lethal actions with the wolf instead of killing wolves and acting like, well, another wolf will come along and fill their spot, which is the kind of the line you hear from the wolf experts. You know, well, another wolf will migrate in and take the spot of whatever wolf was lost to that pack, which is actually not necessarily true. Half of packs break up when one of the reproductive wolves is killed, and at least 75 or more percent break up if both of the leaders of the pack, the alpha or the breeders, which is a terrible name, but that's what's used by some researchers, if they're both killed. So no, it's not necessary that wolves just move in between packs and they can be killed and tolerate all this wolf killing.
Maureen, tell our audience the importance of a pack and how it's so important to keep the pack intact and why. And I think if people really understand why this pack is so important to stay together and not one of them be killed, maybe they could really get why we should stop killing wolves.
Yes. First of all, wolves pass on information to each other, and wolves absolutely must have more than one adult wolf to raise a wolf pup, because wolf pups eat a lot of food. If you think about how much a dog eats, a puppy eats, think about how much that would take for an adult wolf to go out, find the meat. And what they do is they come back after the wolf is weaned, the pup is weaned, they come back and they regurgitate food for those wolf pups. And so the adult wolf will starve to death if it's only one wolf feeding one pup. You need a pack to both sort of watch or babysit the younger, really young wolves that are like 3 months old. You need a sub-adult, like an older sibling from the year before, to watch them at what they call the rendezvous sites. And then you need other wolves to be able to go out and hunt and bring the meat back. And you need a lot of wolves to bring down a big animal, because the wolf only has their jaw. You know, that's all they have. They really don't have claws like a lion, and they don't have the ability to really surprise their prey. They're very straightforward when they hunt. The prey knows they're coming after them because they need a chase. So wolves need that whole pack to survive food-wise. Emotionally, the wolves need the pack because they're very social. And the reason they probably need to be so social is because they have to live in packs. So they have to have all kinds of their social hierarchies and rules and everything. And that's how the pack survives. And that's why you need the packs. And when you break them up, you have young wolves who will then maybe reproduce when they shouldn't, because the reproduction of wolves is really controlled by the social structure. Only one pair of wolves in a pack has one litter of pups at most a year. It's very rare for two litters to be born in the same pack, maybe two females getting pregnant. Very rare. The wolves the ones in charge control the reproduction. So there is nobody else is having babies. Nobody's having puppies. It's just the alpha or the leader wolves, and the rest of the pack helps raise them.
Right. Now, what happens when one of those leaders are killed?
Usually the pack breaks up. Mm-hmm. And if it breaks up, it means that you have a lot of young wolves without leadership trying to make it out there. And sometimes they end up reproducing when they're too young or there just aren't enough wolves to help them. And so then they might go towards easier food, such as livestock producers, calf. And or they might get killed by a car or, you know, end up going towards humans and pets and things like that. So the likelihood of conflicts actually increases when you break up a pack because they can't go out and get the bigger wildlife, you know, such as deer. So
I remember many years ago when I first learned that, I think it was at a rally at the state capitol, and you were there talking about wolves, and I didn't really understand the significance of keeping this wolf pack intact. And after I understood that, I really just got it and why we need to just leave the wolves for their, you know, by themselves and just leave them. We don't need to manage them. They will take care of themselves and the ecosystem.
Yes, one wolf pack will have a territory, and if another wolf goes into their territory and it should not, unfortunately, it's dangerous for that wolf. The pack could attack that wolf. So they defend their territories. So wolves kind of control their own numbers, really. Socially, they control their own numbers.
Right, right. It's really important. Before we close out here, we have about two more minutes here. Maureen, tell our audience how they can contribute and donate to Howling for Wolves, and what kind of, you know, work you're working on and where their money's going.
First of all, I have a very, very exciting project to talk to you guys about, but I think we should probably wait. One of the projects is to work with the United States Department of Ag to buy carcass composting for some livestock producers to reduce attractants to their property. And the other one, and I'm just going to tease you with this, sorry, but it's going to be a tease, it's called the Wolf Forgiveness Bonus Program. And basically, I'm going to propose to pay livestock producers to call Howling for Wolves when they think they've lost an animal to a wolf or even another predator in wolf territory, such as coyotes. I'm going to pay them not to have that wolf killed. So if you want to help us with that, we've already got the program. We're working with, believe it or not, Minnesota Cattlemen's Association. We're having in discussions with them. So howlingforwolves.org, give to us at howlingforwolves.org or at GiveMN. We're registered there.
Awesome. Thank you so, so much, Dr. Maureen Hackett. That was Dr. Maureen Hackett from Howling for Wolves. Thank you for all that wonderful information. We'll get some updates from you soon, so you'll get another email from us, hopefully not at the last minute. Thank you so much. You've been listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake. Thank you so much, Ogama, for hosting with me tonight. We'll be back tomorrow.